Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Blue Line Brothers. I'm Fred, I think.
I think I'm Frank.
You're Frank? Okay. Well, Frank, what are we going to talk about tonight?
Well, I think we should just carry on with the subject at hand from the last episode.
Yeah, we have all this stuff about mindset and try to find some training and try to use some type of, some level of common sense. Not so common sense, maybe we should refer to it these days.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. When we're talking about deadly force, having little mishaps, here and there could prove to be quite costly,
Well, and if you take the legal aspect out of it and the financial aspect out of it, you have a very large emotional burden if you have to go that route. And that's something that a lot of people cannot and will not get past.
The emotional aftermath can change a person for, the rest of your days.
Yep. Then you get to the point where it's like, well, did I really have to do that? Could I have done something else?
Oh, now you're going to bring up the coulda, woulda, shoulda syndrome now. Yep. Oh, my goodness. That's a whole nother monster in and of itself.
Just that whole emotional burden that you're going to carry with you for the rest of your life. So, there's a multifaceted to this that people, once again.
But, hey, the whole thing is, I don't, Frank, I've watched all the major cop shows on TV for the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have a pretty good grasp of what the hell is going to happen and how the hell it's going to happen. And I don't know if we should be wasting all this time, just trying to convince people that they need to be prepared for this, because all you got to do is watch like Magnum PI and NCIS and Chicago Police or whatever they call that show, where all the dirty cops shoot the some of the good cops, and then some of the good cops feel bad because they had to shoot some of the bad guys that shot the bad cop. And I mean, I've seen this stuff on TV, man. I think I have a pretty damn good grasp on what's going on.
Well, I have an even better one. I just stick with the Dirty Harry.
I love Dirty Harry. Yeah, I modeled my career around Sledgehammer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Sledgehammer, as far as I'm concerned, the epitome of law enforcement back in only two seasons. But that he was so good, he only needed two seasons on air.
I mean, anybody who can just clear a building with a law rocket, I mean,
First episode, the first 5 minutes of the first episode, I knew I was hooked right then and there. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the kind of cop I wanted to be. Now, the problem is, none of my chiefs would let me carry an RPG in the trunk.
Well, there's an old saying, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is for permission.
Now, I will tell you, I can admit this now because statute of limitations are way, way, way gone on this one. Well, yeah, that's the cool part is I can tell a lot of stories now because the statute of limitations are way, way gone on almost everything. So, but yeah, I mean, there was a sergeant of mine, and I used to work second shift. He used to work a late tax shift. So for all of those uninitiated people that may not be law enforcement officers. Second shift is normally the busiest shift of any given day because it's normally late afternoon till around midnight or so in that time frame. And of course, everybody knows, because you watch all the cop shows on TV, that everybody gets into fist fights and gun fights and domestic disputes and all this stuff after they come home from work and try to relax, i.e. get drunk or high or stoned or whatever. imbibe, I should say, and you know, all this stuff starts happening. Well, then tax shift, or a late tax shift, depending upon where you might come from, normally kicks off around 6, 7, 8 o'clock at night and normally runs through the rest of the busy, quote-unquote busy part of the night into maybe 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, normally. My sergeant, he worked a late tax shift. So he would come on basically in the middle of my second shift. So when he came on duty, a lot of times he'd hit me up if I wasn't busy doing something or he wasn't getting called out immediately from roll call or something. Excuse me. We would link up for chow at a certain family-owned Chinese restaurant. And after dinner, normally, if things calmed down and we didn't have a whole lot of crap to follow up on and everything, we would go pick one of our properties. We were a community policing outfit and all this stuff, so we had to, you know, be out in public or in areas, you know, high crime areas, and show a presence, and then hopefully, and we often did, stumble upon bad guys.
That weird thing they call, what's that? Oh, that's right, community policing?
Yeah, see, back in the day, that was that term. I had to write like 25 million college term papers on community policing. And I got to the point where I just regurgitated the same crap.
Because it copy was, and paste.
I mean, what the hell? It's the same crap. I mean, you're at a different class. Oh, give us your best interpretation of community policing. Okay, this is highly scientific. And, so... at any rate, one night, there was one particular area that, we migrated toward, that was, experiencing a great deal of very violent crime. So once again, it's like, okay, let's, you know, hone in on this place. Let's catch some bad guys or, you know, put the stuff to bed. You know, that's what we're there for. So we get done with chow. The radio was actually quiet. All right, cool. We're going to go over here. And, of course, we get to the property. That particular sergeant is a Kung Fu Sifu and taught me a lot in Kung Fu, some martial arts, Iron Fist, stuff like that. So, so basically, we would say if we had any quote-unquote downtime, we would always take an opportunity to train. Now, there are various aspects, you know, Kung Fu isn't just one art. I'm not going to get into the whole martial arts crap. But the whole point is there's different aspects to Kung Fu to study and to practice and all this stuff. It's not just a karate chop here or an elbow strike there. You know, there are a lot of tools of the trade, okay? And you know where I'm going with this, tools of the trade like long blades, you know, katanas and stuff like this. Okay, so, well, that's Japanese, but... At any rate, we didn't differentiate. Blades are blades, okay? You're going to train with blades, you're going to train with blades. Outside of a, you know, Roman broadsword or something, you know. The whole point is, it just so happened he had a trunk full of long blades. So we got to this particular property, and we're looking around. We do a bunch of foot patrols, and it's like, dang, where is everybody? You know, everybody went in, it's like they knew we were coming or something. I mean, we were walking all over. We were hiding in shadows and bushes and all this stuff, looking for bad guys and all this stuff. It just so happens, I mean, everybody's behaving themselves that particular night. So we take it upon ourselves, like, you know what, let's do some training. Okay, cool. He goes and pops a trunk. He said, okay, what do you want to do? I said, well, grab a couple of blades. Okay, cool. So we get a couple blades, and we just start practicing katas and stuff in this, basically this central courtyard area of this particular neighborhood. Well, lo and behold, one of the other city guys had a domestic call to go to that wasn't anywhere near us, but it just so happens he was a little far out of his district, so he was zooming past us to get to his domestic. Well, he saw us. Quote unquote, we were in training, you know, with the blades. Man, all we hear is tire screeches. And we look over, there's a squad car. And this officer, he rolls down his window, he looks at us, he, what in the hell are you two doing? And it was great. It's like we were trained SEALs or something. We look over in unison, community policing. And of course, the guy, what the hell are you doing with the swords? We're training. What are you training for? Anything. I mean, hell, the fall of society could happen at any given time. You got to be prepared for this crap, okay? And he's like, I can't believe it. Who do you think you are? It's like, well, we're community police officers. Look around real quick. Do you see any crime being committed anywhere within eyeshot or earshot of our location? Hell no! There's nobody. Who the hell would commit a crime when there's a couple cops with swords playing around in a freaking... Hey, we're doing our job, right? We are suppressing crime. There is no crime being committed in this area. Well, of course, he really... Man, he was having a hissy fit, and he had to get to his domestic. So we were both wondering what frame of mind he would be in once he got to his domestic. But we figured...
The kind that he gets hurt.
Yeah, we might hear about this, because he might tell his chief, and his chief might tell our chief, and, you know. So, of course, that did happen, and... It was funny because our chief said, yeah, those guys are in a different world. And so we let them be, because you know what? They're effective. When they play with swords, nobody commits crime around them. You know, it's just one of those things that, yeah. And it's like, okay,
kind of one of those things like, don't rattle the cage.
Right. But it was great because we probably had the only chief in the city. Hey, Chief, we're going to go practice blades for a little bit. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to go over here. There were a bunch of, you know, drive-by shootings this last week over in such and such area. We're going to go over there and hang out for a while. Okay. You taking your blades with you?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Chief, if that's okay with you. Oh, yeah. Take all the blades you want. Okay, great. See ya. So, yeah, we weren't allowed. They kind of frowned upon the RPG idea, but at least they let us play with blades in public. So... You ought to ask your chief if you can start playing with some long swords or something in public. You know, I think that could really suppress a lot of crime in your area. Don't you think? I mean...
Well, I mean... I just wouldn't ask. I would just...
Well, that's true. You do, yeah. You're kind of like, yeah, we kind of had the same attitude, too. It's like, yeah, like you said, you just go ahead and do it and then ask for permission or... Yeah.
I'm like, I didn't realize I couldn't do that.
But here's the thing. This is a great example of thinking outside of that proverbial box. Okay, once again, another legitimate aspect of a superior mindset, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so once again, you think about things like this with these tactical scenarios that we've been bringing up and the goofballs with guns falling out of their pants and all this stupid garbage. Yeah, you don't be like that, okay, number one. That would be the number one rule. Don't be like the goofball at Walmart, you know, dropping his Glock 19 on the floor, you know, through his sweatpant leg. Number two, you know, be safe in what you're doing. You know, build up those marksmanship skills before you even think about doing anything else as far as training, because you got to stay focused on what you need to do. Then you get past that, then you can start thinking about, okay, you know what, maybe I can start working toward that level where I might be able to carry a firearm for defensive purposes in public. But, like I said, it doesn't hurt to train with some long blades and stuff in between times, because, you know, you never know when, you could. I've been to a number of gun stores that sell some really quality katana blades.
The one that's not really... Wakizashi's
or something.
People kind of overlook, you know, there's two of them. One is a battle axe, the spiked warhammer.
I was going to say the warhammer. That's, man, I won't mention his name, but those of you that are still listening that know me know who this guy is. So you're already laughing about that part, but you're exactly right. The warhammer has got to be one of the best. You know, weapons of all, I mean...
If you were so inclined, you could look at the Molly panel that I have on the back of my seat. I just happen to have a tomahawk that's attached to that
Now, that's a tomahawk. Once again, please enlighten us, okay? Give us some descriptions as far as warhammers versus like a mace versus a tomahawk. Give us a little bit of insight.
Well, the tomahawk is, it has a hickory handle. It's right about 23 inches long, and it only has a blade. It doesn't have, you know, the hammer or anything else. It's just a rounded socket that the handle goes in. And mine might be a little sharper than what it should be, but, you know.
Well, you prepare your tools for efficiency.
Yes. I could probably lop your arm off with it if I wanted to. Anyways, so then the Warhammer, depending on what style that you wanted to wrap your fingers around, it could be anywhere from 18 inches all the way up to like 48 inches long on the handle. But imagine taking a Rubik's Cube and taking all the center pieces out so you only have the four corners. And that's metal. And then, you know, it kind of has the center socket where everything is. And then a lot of them, they'll have a spike. A hardened, pointy spike, which was designed to penetrate the armor from like knight armor, and it's a very formidable weapon, to be honest with you.
So if we were to employ some nomenclature, we could just call that the spiky end.
Mm-hmm.
See, mm-hmm. See.
or we could call it the can opener.
I like that, the can opener.
You know, the mace on the other side. So you have different kinds. You have the pole mace, which is, you know, once again, it's a long piece of metal or a piece of wood. And then it had a ball. Imagine if you took two pieces of metal and made them into a little decorative shape to it, and then set them, like cut slots in them and set them on there, then you have four pieces and it sits upright. So it's essentially, it's like a big hammer.
Big hammer with multiple spiky things.
It's not the traditional hammer. It's more of just, it's like a club.
Like a prickly ball on top of a long piece of wood.
Then you have the mace. You know, which a lot of people, you say mace, they think of the piece of wood with the chain and the ball.
Right, yeah,
with
yeah.
The little, you know, spikes on it. And there's 9,000 different variations of that. But either one of those are a very good melee weapon.
I like spiky things.
Personally, I would like to have my tomahawk and a 48-inch Warhammer.
I think if police officers were to start carrying Warhammers, we would have a whole different impact upon the criminal society.
I mean, this
of society.
Think about it this way. So, you're at an incident, you know, and somebody is in the car and they won't open the window, they won't open the door, and you go, okay. And then, you know, you just reach behind you and you grab your Warhammer, you unsheath that thing and go, last chance. And you just swing like Babe Ruth and you shatter that window. And then the second swing, you spin it around and you have the spike and you bury that right into the airbag in the steering wheel, rendering it useless. Now, you want to talk about a shock value? There you go.
You know what? I'm thinking somebody might actually lose control of certain bodily functions.
Probably. And then the cool thing with the Warhammer, especially with the spike on the end, you can actually use it as a come-hither weapon.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, they want to keep their distance, and you go, no, and you just reach out and take that spike and hook them under the arm or the back of the knee or, you know, wherever, through the kidney, you know, and just, come here. And you can just...
See, just multifarious ways of implementing things like Warhammers.
Or let's say, you know, there's somebody barricaded in the house and, you know, you can't break the door down. You can take that spike and spin it around and actually bury that spike through the door handle, thus separating all of that pot metal in there that, you know, for the engines, you just open the door and walk right through. With, you know, the minimal amount of damage to the door and, of course, to the spike of your Warhammer. So, if you need to go in there and you need to clear a room or something, you just jam the spike into the cushion on the couch and pull it out of the way, and there you go. You're not bent over looking into it. You're literally stabbing it and pulling it out of the way.
Well, you know what? I think this is a great counterpoint to all these yo-yos out here talking about how, you know, the law enforcement's too militarized these days and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So, excuse me. What we're advocating for is more of an ancient militarization, if you will.
Oh, and that Warhammer can be used for the offensive and the defensive side.
Well, of course.
And, oh, dear God, if you get somebody who can wield one of those the correct way...
Oh, my golly.
Yes. You will be picking... they will hand your ass to you. Let's just put it that way.
Well, that... At that point, if you're facing... Oh, man, I mean, that'd be an ugly situation. But the Warhammer could clean it up rather quickly. Mm-hmm. Well, I see it. I mean, I hate to say it, but there'd be parts flying everywhere.
You can get a Warhammer in just about any size that you want. But the most efficient one is the actual face of the hammer itself is between 3 to 4 inches square.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of those little corners has the equivalency of a pyramid. So when you hit it, it's like a meat tenderizer.
Oh, yes.
So you come down and you go ka-thunk. Yeah.
That's a lot of kinetic energy being transferred.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a great deal.
Yeah. I still have, you know, it's in the back of my mind of getting one to let's say, keep by the door.
It's a heck of a lot better than a PR-24.
No, it's really not.
Of course it is. I mean, it only takes 5 minutes to get certified on a Warhammer. In theory. I mean, let's put it this way, it'd be better than an expandable baton that, you know, in the one circumstance you actually rely on it to expand properly and it doesn't, and then the bad guy starts laughing at you.
You know, speaking of that...
Not that ever happened to me. Just once.
My baton, I might have to buy a new one because it's got a really bad bend in it.
Oh, my golly, I can't believe it. From where did you purchase that? Do you remember? Did you keep the receipt? I mean,
it's been years ago.
I can't believe that they're selling inferior expandable batons. I mean, because there's no way I could believe that you would actually strike anything, any consistency or thickness
I think
that it would actually bend the shaft of your.
I think I dropped it. That's what it was. Yeah. I think I dropped it.
And, of course, we have to be very careful about discussing bent shafts.
Yeah.
That's never a good thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, see, once again, that Warhammer would solve that problem. You wouldn't have to worry about a bent shaft on a Warhammer now, would you?
No.
See?
See, you could actually take him and make a hickory handle, and then you could have the gussets from the head come down, and it would be riveted into.
Yes.
And you'd have it come down, oh, I don't know, 8-10 inches. So that way when you go to hit something with the face of the Warhammer and you miss, or you go through it, you won't worry about damaging the handle.
That's true. Now, I think this is also a good time to remind everybody that we are merely a couple of knuckle-draggers here for cheap entertainment and political incorrectness.
And the shock value.
Of course, so it's all about shock value.
Here's a scenario for you to think about. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, and you and a couple of your friends decide, ooh, let's go into this house. You come in the back door, and you make the fatal mistake of waking me up.
Okay, so we're breaking into your house?
Uh-huh.
And we're waking you up?
Uh-huh.
I mean, specifically you. Okay.
Me.
Okay.
And, you know, you're in there, you're rooting around like, oh, we could take this, we could take that, and ooh, look at that big safe. We're going to focus on that. And then all of a sudden, from behind you, you hear a maniacal little giggle, and you turn around, and you see me standing with a Warhammer, wearing a sombrero, a thong, and flip-flops. Now, if that is not the most
actually
shocking thing...
You ruined my appetite.
But can you imagine what they would think?
Well, actually, I know this is a podcast, so I have to ask a few qualifying questions here. What color is the thong?
It would either be day-glow pink.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
Or maybe kind of that oil slick look, you know, to where it just shimmers in the moonlight as it comes through the window.
Shimmers in the moonlight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I'll probably lose about 10-15 pounds. Definitely. I won't be able to eat anything for quite a while.
Just think of how much weight they're going to lose.
Wait a minute. Warhammer.
Yeah.
Okay, now I got Warhammer in my head again. Okay, I'm feeling a lot better now. Warhammer. Warhammer. Yeah. Warhammer. Uh-huh. Yeah. Gratuitous violence. Okay, body parts.
Oh. And, you know, it's 48 inches long, so I don't have to get really close, and I can just get like 2 or 3 of them in one swoop. Bam.
Whammo. See, that it's a highly efficient tool. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
It's, oh, man.
And then, like, the spike on the back,
mm-hmm.
You can spin it around to where, you know, the spike is going forward, and you can literally come, like, an upswing and get them in the back of the thigh. And it will go...
Oh, I'm thinking about, yeah.
It will go through the thigh and come out the other side.
What was that phrase, split a man from stem to stern?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one big old split.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's where my tomahawk will come in.
And see, that's the cool part about a tomahawk. Once you get that throwdown, I mean...
I just might actually have that down.
And so, you know, now you've got some distance. I mean, you could have some decent distance. I mean, holy smokes.
And on top of that, if you... Let's say you over or under rotate it. It doesn't matter because you have a chunk of steel and wood flying through the air, and it's going to hit you.
Yeah, there's only one disadvantage, and it's hard to get over when it comes to throwing, hatchets or tomahawks mm-hmm. or something like that, in that you're literally throwing away a weapon.
But the way that it works is you throw it, and while it's in midair, you are actually closing the distance behind
it. Oh, most definitely. Yeah, oh, I get it. But, you know, once again, we're talking about dynamic situations mm-hmm. where all kinds of things are going on and all this stuff. And, I mean, so really, I mean, in the real world sense, you still have a diminished percentage of actually successful retrieval.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. But that's, yeah.
That's why you come out in your sombrero, thong, and flip-flops with more than one weapon in your hand.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The mental image is a weapon in and of itself.
Exactly.
I mean, that's, trust me.
The shock value of them turning around and seeing me and going, oh, shit, what is that?
Yeah.
And then when they actually start to, you know, see it and recognize what they're looking at and it actually sinking into their brain, that's when the Warhammer will smash across the temple and go, hi, how you doing? You picked the wrong house. I'm just going to tell you that right now. So, yeah. I digress.
So, does your therapist know that you think through scenarios like this on a routine basis?
Nope.
Hopefully he or she isn't listening to this podcast right now.
I never told her about it.
Okay, and we're and the other great aspect of this is we're not popular, so
exactly
nobody of any importance that might levy charges or anything like that, because once again, those who I know are listening are of great importance personally, but. From a legal sense or professional sense, I think we're pretty safe, you know, because the one advantage of not rating very highly is that, let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
So.
We'll just stop digging that hole right there.
All right. Well, it's probably going to take us a few minutes to climb out of that one, but. The whole thing, we can still tie this in, right?
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Once again, of course, we're being a bit facetious, but the whole idea here is, well, just work with me here a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Just
please,
because we got to make it sound halfway like we're almost sane. You know, we can't. Oh. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was all make-believe.
Uh-huh. Right. See, exactly. We just came up with this. Haphazardly, we just came up with this. But that's the whole idea here, okay? Thinking outside of that proverbial box is a big, big portion of this whole survival thing, okay? The whole mindset as far as when you keep your head on a swivel and you keep your spidey senses, if you will, on condition yellow, and so, once again, it's not that you're always thinking about Warhammers and Tomahawks, but the whole idea is that anything can happen at any time, mm-hmm. okay? And once again, let's harken back just an episode or two ago when we were talking about these challenges that we had, okay? We could not control those circumstances.
No.
Okay? They happened to us whether we wanted them to or not. Okay, but it was up to us to deal with it. Okay, now, like I said, you know, we still have that differentiation between civilian and law enforcement. The civilians, you don't have that requirement to step in and do something. So if you're not fully prepared, if you're not in the tactical position, and we're going to start talking about some more Sun Tzu tenets and things like that, and we're going to start tying more stuff together as far as, you know, a thought process as far as, okay, do I take the fight to the bad guy, or do I let him bring the fight to me? You know, things like that. We're going to start talking about stuff like that, that yes, as a civilian, can come in very handy when it comes to a mindset and a thought process. And you might start thinking about, well, okay, I'm not in a good position to brandish my firearm and try to challenge this particular person or the bad guy or a group of people over here, whatever the situation might be. Or maybe you are in a position of advantage. Maybe you can do something like that. But once again, there are a lot of things. Gunfighting is an art. Okay, I'm just going to say it. It is. But it entails a number of variables.
It's actually the art of luck and skill.
Oh, yes. There's a whole lot of luck to this. Okay, there's a whole lot of luck to this. And once again, often these things happen by happenstance. All right? Once again, we don't have control of all this stuff. We have very little control. But once again, the whole point is what you can control, well, then control that. You know, focus on that when you're training and you're doing things, because focusing on the things that you can't control is pretty counterproductive if you think about it.
Well, not to beat the dead horse, but if you do not control the situation will control you.
In the law enforcement sense, here's the thing. And we're going to talk, we'll flip gears here for a second, because on the law enforcement side, yes, if you are not in control, you're dead. Okay, I'm going to say it, because once again, I still hearken back to what we discussed, and I hate to keep, once again, beating a dead horse, but going back to that training experience that you had earlier last year, I am still so freaking steamed that, you know, that stuff happened the way it happened, because it's such a disservice to the officers, it's such a disservice to the public. But this is the thing. As police officers, we have to understand tactical aspects. We have to understand strategy aspects. Okay, there's two different worlds, basically, all right? Well, and the problem is, even in the military...
Try it this way. There's two different avenues to approach...
Well, here's the thing. We're going to split that up here fairly quickly, because here's the deal. You've got, you know, small unit type, just like in the military, with you can tell us about your experiences on the FAST team and stuff like that, because the whole thing is you have small unit, you're a tactician. Mm-hmm. You know, when you come out of basic training or the basic police academy, you know, and you, first couple, you're learning how to work with you and your squad members, or with you and your platoon members, you know, and stuff like that, all right? So you're in a tactical world, all right? And that's what, of course, that's exactly how you need to focus. And you're doing that, and you're basically small unit tactics or individual tactics or what have you, because once again, in the law enforcement world, oftentimes we're outmanned, outgunned from the outset, and, okay, get used to it, because that's life for us. Okay, that's why we train the way we train, and that's, once again, why you need that superior mindset and why you need to be able to think outside of that proverbial box, because you're going to find ways to implement your tools in a different fashion that may not be exactly how your SOP is written, but you know enough, you've become a master at your SOPs and your criminal law aspects that, hey, you know what your latitude is. And you know how far you can go.
And the beauty of that, no two situations are ever the same.
No.
That's where your little lateral movement within the law, it comes into play. Yeah, it's like, okay.
We played by the book. And once again... we play by the book because that thin blue line is mm-hmm. what separates society from anarchy. And if we don't do our job properly, and I stress that because we have to do our job properly. Violating somebody's rights is not doing your job properly. Okay, so once again...
Yeah, that just makes...
just because...
That just makes you a bad guy with a badge.
Well, the thing is... You know, there was a guy, uh-huh. there was a guy that I knew from a distance, I should say. He was not within my unit or anything like that. So, but yes, there was a guy that started off a very, very, very good police officer and spent many years as a very good police officer. And some things happened, and, you know, he, once again, which is, once again, another hard thing to do, you know, keep business, and personal feelings. Yeah. But the thing is, they, at some point in time, you know, we're human, they're going to meld. And how you handle it is going to dictate, you know, just how good of a police officer you are. And this particular gentleman did not handle it very well and took too many things personally and started to kind of go down that rabbit hole, trying to justify, hey, if I can just do this and get this bad guy in jail, society's going to be a better society because, yeah, I cut some corners and who cares, I got this guy in jail. All right, well, that's how it starts, okay? And then once again, you know, at what point, you know, well, you know, he meant well. Well, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So, you know, you can.
That is true.
So the whole thing is there's still no viable excuse to cut corners. There's, that was probably one of my, well, outside of officer safety, that was one of my biggest pet peeves as an FTO, as a field training officer, is that you do things the right way the first time. Stop trying to cut corners. I don't care if it's on the paperwork. I don't care if it's something silly. I mean, I'm not saying that you're violating somebody's rights, but what I'm saying is you stick to a certain protocol from the outgoing, and guess what? It's a lot easier to maintain it, okay, because that's what you're doing all the way through. And but that's the whole thing. How many times you guys end up spending twice as much time trying to take a shortcut than rather than just doing everything properly the first time and being done with it. So, and how many times I'm sure you've had, oh, I've been to this house 45 times and I keep dealing with the same people. Well, maybe that should tell you something. Maybe you're not doing something that maybe you could be doing, you know, to and maybe not exacerbate the problem, maybe find a solution or help someone find a solution or what have you. So, you know, these are things you start thinking about. It's like, oh, yeah, maybe I can think outside of the box a little bit. Once again, still stay within your parameters, still stay within the law and all that stuff. But, you know, let's get something solved here. So, because every time you show up to the house again or whatever, you know, when you repeat, you're that's another possibility of somebody getting hurt, maimed, or killed. Okay, so if you can take care of the situation the right way the first time, if that can happen, then maybe you can circumvent, you know, future contacts that could lead to, you know, somebody getting hurt, maimed, or killed. Sorry, I just had to go there.
It's an FTO. Because that that whole concept, it fits right in with what we were originally talking about. You know, you have to be able to think inside and outside of the box. Especially, you know, the original concept was, you know, we'll talk about carrying a gun. You have to be able to use your brain and think inside, outside, and, you know, sometimes over and under the box.
Here's an example. I was by myself in the middle of the hood, no backup coming. Looking around for a guy. I was actually doing some research, seeing that, yeah, there's a guy, a murder warrant. Just so happens, I run into the guy.
Like, well,
on a street corner, yeah. Well, you know, this guy's face looks awfully familiar. Oh, you're
well,
him.
Damn.
And of course, I happen to be wearing a police uniform, and he happened to recognize it.
Huh. Yeah, that does kind
of. Well, of course, you know, it's like, well, no backup. So, all right, well, I'm going to have to, you know, I'm not walking away from this dude. You know, he's going to jail. You know, it may be an awfully long day for me, but this guy's going to jail. I ain't walking away from this guy. So he as we, you know, started off, you know, with the whole, your mom is this and you look like that and blah, blah, blah. I said, yep, I agree. you're absolutely right. Yep. Except for my mama. Don't talk about my mama like that.
Can you think of something new for once?
I know. I mean, yeah, it gets old after a while. It's like, blah, 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 blah. It's like, can you please, you know, buy a brain cell, do something to come up with something a little bit better than your mama this and blah, blah, blah. Well, at any rate, this guy looks at me and says, you're going to need a SWAT team to take me in. I ain't going to jail. And I looked at him. I said, I don't need a SWAT team. And he looks back at me and said, you some kind of tough guy? I said, nope, I am not a tough guy. However, I am an evidence technician and an arson investigator. And of course, the guy looks at me like, what the F does that mean to me? I said, I can make 25 stab wounds to your back look like suicide. Now, you could actually see the gear start to turn in this dude's brain, you know, thin skin up there, you know. And he gets this look on his face, and about 15 seconds later, he just puts it, and of course, I'm looking at him dead in the eye. I mean, the whole time. I'm not blinking or anything. I'm like, you know, how you want it, you know? It's going to be. He looks at me, he puts his wrists out, and he says, it doesn't have to be all that, man. I'll just go to jail.
Good choice.
Okay. Now, I didn't say anything until I got the cuffs on behind his back. Successfully got him in the car, you know, had him patted down and all this stuff, got him processed. And I said, oh, by the way, I guess I'm not going to need a SWAT team, am I? So, you think outside of the box. Now, once again, for all you legal eagles out there, no, I am not going to stab the guy 25 times in his back and try to pass it off as suicide. That's not going to happen. The point is, the guy started thinking that, man, this guy knows enough to know something about, oh, yeah, he ain't just fresh out of the academy and all this crap. And, okay, and it worked, all right? So, we got a guy in. I didn't, outside of patting him down and handcuffing him and everything, we didn't have to go fist to cuffs. We didn't have to get hurt. We didn't have to go to the hospital or get maimed or killed or any of this crap, all right? We took care of a situation thinking outside of the box.
Well, now hang on a minute. So, kind of rule of thumb, you know, a team is 3 to 5 people, correct?
Depending upon the situation.
So, it might be a stretch, but if you would have reached out and slapped him, wouldn't that be the same as a SWAT team? Because you did SWAT him with your hand, and there's 3
well,
to 5.
Yes. Well, there was a time I was discussing the finer points of a SWAT team to a bad guy. Mm-hmm. I said, yeah, I didn't qualify for SWAT, but I did qualify for the SWAT team. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he found that rather amusing. Yeah, he did. And then we got the cuffs on, and it's like, oh, what the hell just happened here? I don't know. But hey, let me just give you a quick escort downtown. We'll take care of it, you know, we'll make it cheap, quick and easy.
Would you like the air conditioner on, or just roll the window down?
Yeah, we'll put the AC on, and here we go. So,
But
see, that was back in the day, too. You know, once again, it's a whole different world now. Of course, we could have, you know, 3 or 4 seasons dedicated to that topic. But the whole thing is, you know, back in the day when you had Chris Rock in his famous stand-up show, you remember that, don't you? You know, How Not to Get Your Ass Kicked by the Police?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had that saved on our laptops.
Yeah. And push play.
And actually, because we had a number of repeat customers, you know, that went to
those
jail.
Those are always nice.
Yeah, but they always requested that tape. It's like, hey, man, could you play some Chris Rock? I kind of need it. I effed up again, man. I need some Chris Rock. Okay, cool.
Why, yes you did, because you're sitting in the back seat of the car.
Don't let your woman, man, that's me, man, that's me. The guy in the back. Oh, so you got yourself some woman there problems there, huh? Uh-huh. Hey, your woman yelling, you know, calling you out again? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Well, let's just clap my hands for you and let's go downtown.
Yeah, exactly. But hey, once again, if you can instill a modicum of cheap humor here and there, you know, and keep the client base happy, you know, that's a whole thing. But and that's a whole thing. People, the bad guys, especially the career bad guys, the career police officers, once again, we don't honestly think of this as a game, but we refer to it as the game. Okay, and yes, the bad guys are supposed to be bad guys. You expect them to be bad guys, so they're going to do bad guy things. Okay, apparently, the devil spawn does not understand that. Of course, they're on their own mission, and most of the time, the devil spawn actually hires the bad guys to do dastardly things on their behalf. Did I say that out loud? Yeah, I think I did.
The devil spawn doesn't understand anything unless it benefits them.
Well, that's the whole thing. But that's you know, people have asked me around here, once again, merely my knuckle-dragger opinion, okay? It's nothing more than an opinion. But people have asked me, what's up with the crime rate in this city and everything? I said, well, because crime pays for the devil spawn. I don't understand. I said, well, my entire unit was laid off because of devil spawn, okay? Because they were in very, doing very bad things, okay, to lots and lots of people within the county and the city limits. And some of our investigations, we weren't initially aiming for the devil spawn to take them out. We were just following an investigation. Once again, if you remember, it's been a number of episodes ago, we were talking about a quote-unquote good investigator does not lead his or her investigation. A good investigator follows things. Okay, well, that's what we were doing, is following our investigation, and it happened to lead us to some devil spawn. And, of course, all hell broke loose, and suddenly we lost funding for our unit. And we get laid off as a unit because we did too good of a job. Because we would have been putting some prominent people in prison. I wish I
should have went ahead and done it.
Well, yeah, trust me. So, yeah, for everybody out there, keep in mind that, yeah, you may not like what your law enforcement agency is doing, but there may be a number of reasons behind the scenes of why they do what they do. And I say that I'm not trying to apologize for them or anything like that. I'm just saying that, as with most situations in this world, there's a lot more to the story than what's being reported. So just keep that in mind, okay? Especially when it entails devil spawn. Yes, especially when it entails devil spawn.
Yeah, because they're just... they're two-faced upon two-faced upon two-faced. And they only do something that benefits them. And if you fall by the wayside or you get burnt up in the hole, well, it's, you know, tough.
There are a number of situations, fortunately, because I can honestly say this, there were two or three times where I was privy to some conversations between politicians, and those politicians did not know that I was where I was. So they were speaking freely, and I heard firsthand exactly what, in general terms, they think of us. And I say us in that I know what they think of police. I also know what they think of civilians. Okay? And it's almost on the same level. Police, they hate worse because that thin blue line is what stymies their progression to what they want to do. And of course, once again, this ties into some things in current times, hint, 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 if one were to actually conduct a legitimate investigation and actually read some things and books and certain articles and other legal documents that are, you know, released publicly by law, you might learn some things. Of course, some of these things you wish you didn't learn after you realize what they are and what's going on. But the whole thing is, after I heard a number of these people say the things that they did, that just, you know, like, all right, well, now, you know, my opinion has been set in stone, and there is no changing that. And once again, just keep in mind that this goes back several decades, and we're not going to get into all this stuff now, of course, but just like I said, feel free to do some homework and once again, think outside of that proverbial box, and you'll start to realize that things aren't necessarily as they seem. And it's all about, I say the almighty dollar, but soon it's a fiat currency, so it's not all and mighty at all. But that's what it's about. So, I still want a Warhammer, man. I want a Warhammer.
Well, you know,
I was so happy that I found my Kukri that now I want a Warhammer. I got to have something to go along with the Kukri.
You know? After this episode is done, I will show you where to go and get said Warhammer.
Yeah, but it's got to be authentic.
Like I said.
Okay, good. We're on the same plane then. Okay. Well, is that about it, Frank?
Yeah, we're getting
close, aren't we?
We're getting close on that time frame.
Well, just keep in mind, both of you that are still listening,
or maybe half of one.
You experienced a great deal of cop humor. We're not completely out of our gourd. Okay, maybe we should consult the
attorney. That's open for interpretation.
Yeah. Okay, just forget I said that. We're just a couple of knuckle draggers trying to promote just a mere modicum of cheap, careless humor. Politically incorrect humor, of course.
Yes, that is the best kind, though.
But until next time, I'm Fred, I think.
I think I'm Frank.
Okay.
We shall see you next time.